Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot for you. Today, we talk about rookies. It is time for the first rookie report of the year. We're having one of these at the top of every month. We talk Cooper Flagg. We talk VJ Edgecombe. We're talking Derek Queen. We're talking Trey Johnson. We're bouncing around 10 rookies and some shout outs. And then after that, we give our early thoughts on the unrivaled rosters as they had their live draft earlier this week. We talk about all 8 clubs and what we like and what we're intrigued by. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here, and ready to talk about some rookies.
It is time for our first rookie report of the season. And if you are new to the Dunker Spot, we generally try to have one of these at the top of every month. Since we are back on the 2-episode-a-week cadence, we will absolutely be getting these in through the year so we can track progress, talk about other rookies as the season goes on. It's going to be a lot of fun. We normally try to aim for like 8 to 10 rookies per rookie report. And so if we do not talk about a rookie on your favorite team, it is not because we hate them. We are just trying to get a group. And luckily for this episode, this will serve as our first plug of the day. We have our selection of rookies and our order in which we talk about them because our very own Steve Jones Jr. released his first rookie ranking of the season. So we'll be following his order, following his players. We'll sprinkle in some honorable mentions and some quick shout outs towards the end of this. But we start in Philadelphia. Because we have to start in Philadelphia. Ranked number one for Steve and for me too, honestly. He's your rookie of the year front right now. It's VJ Edgecombe, the Philadelphia 76ers. As of recording, averaging 17.6 points per game, converting 48% of his twos, nearly 39% of his threes, 81% from the line, 5.6 rebounds, 4.8 assists, 1.4 steals. He is third in the NBA in minutes per game. And hovering around the top 10 in touches per game has been a lot of usage for the rookie. And for me, Steve, it starts with the athleticism with VJ Edgecombe. He is an absolute physical freak. He will try to dunk on your head and your family's head at the same time. But what I most appreciate about it is that the athleticism is functional. It's not just transition, run straight ahead, run fast. You feel it on his drives in the half court. You feel it when he's flying in for offensive rebounds. He's averaging 2 of those a game so far. You feel him when he's trying to mirror guys in space defensively. Like, all of it's functional, and it just gives him such a foundation for him to play off of. So I start there with VJ. What stands out to you most about the VJ Edgecombe experience so far?
Well, I mean, I think we could stay there, and I'd probably add, even on top of what VJ's done to start this season, looking big picture, a lot of what can determine success for a rookie, it comes down to fit, opportunity, and context. Mm-hmm. And this is a great fit. It's a great opportunity, and the context works for VJ Edgecombe to pop in Philadelphia. I think his drives are fantastic. He gets downhill. We know he can self-create. But for me, the biggest thing is the fact that early on, he has this runway, but he's putting together a package as a young guard. Mm-hmm. And I feel like having multiple things that you show that you can do is important, especially early on in the season. So you want to showcase one good, consistent skill that's going to get you more minutes, get you more opportunity, you can showcase more. But the fact that he's blending a little bit of everything is fantastic. Mm-hmm. His skill set fits next to Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. And so if you put him in a situation where he's one pass away from Tyrese Maxey, who's looking to attack one-on-one, has great speed. If you put him in a scenario with Joel Embiid's posting up and, you know, he's been able to make the defense pay. So now you can kind of open things up in the offense. You can run a handoff with him and Embiid with that side empty. And now you have Tyrese Maxey on that right wing. And now with VJ Edgecombe turning the corner with your athleticism point, that wing defender, that nail defender has a decision to make. Do I help on this drive? Do I leave Tyrese Maxey, or do I leave this lane open for VJ Edgecombe to turn the corner and finish? I think that's been a really fun thing to see him kind of add to the table. Mm-hmm. And I like that he's kind of grown a little bit as the season's gone on. It's not always the turbo button in pick and roll. There is an element of hesitation. There is an element of attacking space. Very much enjoys when he comes off the screen in pick and roll. Hey, my defender, you are now behind me. You will stay behind me. and I will continue to drive. So I think it's just the overall package has been really fun to see him put together.
I'm glad that you hit on that point, because something that we talked about in some of our early preseason talks over the summer, as people who are new to the Dunker Spot, I am not Mr. Draft. I have a rough outline of some of the top guys and things. I have the archetypes that I like. And then once we get into summer league, I'm like, okay, let me dig in. Let me see what these dudes can actually do. I want to come in with a fresh slate mostly. And so one of the first things that popped for me with VJ was like, hey, he seems pretty comfortable operating inside the arc. So to your point about getting guys on his hip, just kind of navigating tight quarters and not being sped up, it's like, hey, it's cool that he already sees this and already has this kind of pacing internally. I want to see it against better competition, you know, outside the summer league context, but it's a positive sign that he's actively trying to operate in this way. And so the fact that so much of that has carried over into the regular season so far, and with this workload that he has, is pretty encouraging to me. So I appreciate you, Steve, for hitting on that. And even to him just playing one pass away off of guys, like, he is so, again, he's explosive generally, but I do love some of the early prep work that he does. Like, he is running into some of these catches. And so not only can he just beat you to spots naturally, he's making it more difficult when there's a swing sequence. He's now running into the catch. He's a dribble away from really threatening, you know, the heart of your defense. And so, like, that's been cool. Watching him kind of build the passing package off of those drives has also been cool. I think, to your point, Steve, the spacing setup and who he's alongside and some of the decisions that off-ball defenders have to make, it does simplify some of the reads for him, but you want the reads to be simple for all of your players, but especially for rookies. And so the fact that he is more consistently taking advantage of those opportunities, I think, is a positive.
Well, I said, let's hang there for a second. I think it's the willingness to pass that stands out to me, especially for a young guard. Being able to understand when a defense is helping, where the ball needs to go, and being able to zip it there. That's something I feel like he's built on from the preseason and into these regular season reps. And that helps, especially, you know, as Philadelphia continues to alternate lineups. Some nights they'll have Embiid, some nights they won't. And so you kind of have a package where he's able to kind of shine and still kind of keep guys involved.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And I think for me, that kind of flows into one of the growth areas that I have for VJ. Because he does have this level of poise inside the arc overall. And I think especially when you're looking through the lens of just rookies, he seems to be a step ahead of most guys. You do still just have the general young player, rookie ball handler stuff where he gets into the paint. Sometimes he's driving in a little too deep. And now it's a jump pass trying to get out of trouble. And that can be problematic for him. Or in an effort to keep things moving, he's picking up the dribble a little bit too early. And so some of those minor nuances kind of pop up in film. Like, I think back to like the most recent outing against Chicago, where we've just talked about what they like to do defensively. But Chicago is also a team that likes to send a bunch of pick and rolls and handoffs down the sideline. They like to ice those, et cetera. And so there were a few possessions with VJ running a super high pick and roll. And it's like one dribble I'm getting off of it when he's running this with Joel Embiid. It's just like, hey, you probably have another dribble or two to really string out Vooch or whoever the big is and then make the pass. It's good that you want to get off of it, but you do have some room to operate in some of those pockets. Like, there was one possession in particular where Joel Embiid is quite literally pointing like, hey, no, go down the sideline, go ahead. Still got off of it early. I'm just like, ah. But again, like, if that's the worst I can say about VJ, like, I'm not super concerned at all. But it is something where I'm like, as he gets more reps, that's something that should get better.
Well, I mean, I think this will be I think this will be a recurring theme during this episode. And mainly when you're a young player, when you're a young guard, learning to make reads is not easy. Fitting in next to other stars or high quality players is not easy. So there's a balance between, okay, how are they treating me? What am I looking to attack? Am I reading this correctly? So to some of those possessions against Chicago, some of that is, let me get the ball to Joel Embiid. Some of that is, oh, that's right, they are pushing me down to the side, let me get it right to him. And so there's a balance between, as you mentioned, driving too much, getting off of it too quick. And then that leads to kind of one of my question marks. How's this going to look as the season progresses? Because early success is fantastic. But early success means if I have my team polo on and I get into that morning meeting, we now have to discuss you in a different fashion. That scouting report gets updated. That game plan starts to turn up a little bit. So one of the things you saw, especially against like Cleveland, a little bit more activity, a little bit more pressure, throwing different things at him, pick and roll. You might see a person right at the level. Brooklyn threw some of that at him as well. So, okay, how do you handle when you get two on the ball? How do you handle when you drive and, hey, the defense sinks in and it's fantastic, you can kick, But when you're looking to kind of, you know, he's kind of got the in-between game as well. So look, turn the corner and finish. Try and get to like the mid-range floater type beat. Cleveland was like, hey, go ahead and drive him to the paint. There's going to be about three of us. One of us is going to get a piece of this shot. And so that's where it's like, okay, how do we find the nuance? How do we grow within and balance the aggression that he's shown with the opportunity and how defenses are going to start to treat him?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. To bounce quickly off of like the middle of the floor kind of shot making for VJ, as of recording, 6 of 18 on off the dribbles twos for him so far. Not where you want to be. Again, it's a positive to me that he can comfortably get to some of these shots. Like, there is a plan. It isn't, to draw a previous like podcast example, like I've talked a lot about RJ Barrett in this context, more so when he was in New York. Like, hey, when he does get into the middle of the floor, forget the efficiency for a moment. What shot does he want to get to? Is he comfortable taking pull-up twos with forward momentum? Is he comfortable getting into jumping off two, getting into a quick push shot? So the efficiency, you want to be better for VJ. I do think it's a positive that he at least has a plan in the middle of the floor. And again, that's just to make a quick comparison. RJ's been very good this year. But it's one of those where, like, I like that he's building off of that. Quickly, for you, Steve, how have you felt about the VJ defense so far this year?
I think he's got a willingness on that end of the floor. I think he gives the effort defensively. I think there's obviously some things he has to work through as a young player. He has to work to keep the ball in front. He has to balance when he's giving ball pressure and up, trying to, you know, make it uncomfortable for the ball handler without giving up angles, without giving up driving angles, yeah, without his footwork kind of opening up a drive. He can contain, he works hard, but sometimes he can get hit and he can bounce back. That's not anything that's new or anything. There's almost sometimes where he's working so hard to contain, he almost gives up space. Mm. And so the idea is, I'm going to get to the spot and beat you there and, you know, I'll stop your drive. Problem is, that's a lot different if you're already on the block. And so how does he work to balance sliding and staying in front versus giving up a deep touch near the paint? Now your contest is there, but it's an easier shot depending on who you're defending.
I got you. Like, the ball pressure was something that popped for me early during the regular season, at the very least. It just kind of blended into, wow, the Sixers sure are playing fast and they're just in your face. And here's all this athleticism and speed, et cetera. And now here's VJ Edgecombe. He can just slide with you and pressure you, et cetera. And so, like, the per possession consistency was kind of like the broader point that I wanted to make. But you've already hit on a lot of points that I want to talk about with just how he's containing these drives and how he's absorbing contact. And is there a little bit more, I guess, more prevention versus like a bend don't break type with some of these slides? But again, it's one of those, like, I anticipate that he is going to get better at this. And we're going to be a year or two from now, he's just going to be a very good defender. And like, maybe I end up being wrong on that, but I've already kind of bought in to what VJ is going to be on both ends of the floor. Like, even if he doesn't end up being like best rookie overall this year, like, he might just be my favorite already. I don't know if that's a hot take or not. It shouldn't be. So I'm just kind of in on the VJ experience. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun for Mr. Edgecombe. Is there anything that we haven't hit on with VJ or anything in your notes that you want to touch on?
Not for me.
Okay. Sprinkle in just in terms of the defensive activity. He is tied for the rookie lead as of recording in deflections per game at 3.3. Golden State's Will Richard also at 3.3. So quick salute to him. But that's going to be it, I think, for VJ Edgecombe. Heck of a start. And now we move to number two on Steve's list. We go to Memphis. We have a bright spot in Memphis, thank goodness. Cedric Howard, as of recording, averaging 14.3 points, converting 63% of his twos, 41% of his threes, shooting 90% from the line, 5.4 rebounds per game, averaging a little over one offensive rebound per contest, 2.7 assists, 1.1 steals. All of that coming off the bench. Steve, what has stood out to you the most about Cedric Howard so far?
Well, I think when it comes to Cedric Howard, number one, he's got a confidence and an energy about him when he enters the game. And I think being able to showcase what you do off the bench as a rookie is not easy. So the consistency, I think, has been fantastic there. I think it's been hard to keep him off the court because of the effort that he gives on both ends. The shooting helps a lot. When you are knocking down catch, shoot threes, step back threes, that's a big plus. But I think, obviously, what's big for me is the defense. And if you look at who he's been asked to or worked to defend over the last week, Luka Doncic, Cade Cunningham, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant. And so this is a crash course in, hey, 3-and-D, am I that? I think we've seen a lot of great effort from him. I mean, you saw what he did against Devin Booker as far as containing and pressuring and being active. I think when he's off ball and he's defending his man, there are times where, you know, he's playing off and he's in a help position. And then they try to go side to side. They try and get his man dribble handoff. He just eats the space up and then fights over a screen. And so it's not a perfect world, but you got to like the ball pressure. You got to like the mindset. You got to like the activity. That's something that's good young as a rookie. Now, there are some tweaks, some areas of opportunity defensively, which naturally come with a young rookie. I think going back to the Laker game, Luka and Marcus Smart decided to play pick and roll in different ways, screening for each other. And, I have Luka Doncic. Oh, that's Mark Smart. I stayed attached. I shouldn't have done that. Or sometimes on the weak side, understanding when to sink and fill, balancing out that activity. But if you're Memphis, you got to feel very good about the start you've gotten from Cedric Coward and what he could bring to the table going forward.
Hey, Steve, can I know you real quick?
Sure.
Hashtag draft good basketball players? Question mark? With old Cedric Coward going to Memphis?
I'm glad you brought that up. How's that going?
You know, really good with Cedric Coward. And that's what we're here for.
Continue.
Smile emoji. But no, to bounce off of what you said, I think what pops for me is just what he does off the ball. Like you mentioned, the way that he chews up space when navigating things defensively. Offensively, he is such a smart mover. And as you mentioned, like not always perfect. There are times where he's sliding. It's like, hey, if you stay stationary, you're probably fine. But the fact that he's always looking to kind of maximize space and to create openings and to stay in his ball handler's line of sight, I love that he has that sense about him. Really good cutter. He doesn't waste time when he's sliding on top of that. Like one of the things that I've appreciated that's kind of popped on film a few times, it's like he's on the left wing and he's flying pretty much to the opposite wing on some of these relocations. It's like, hey, he really wants to put strain on help defenders in that way and to kind of maximize the kind of space. And then when he gets downhill, like he's driving with some juice. Like I had some early questions about like what exactly is the like vertical pop when he's at the rim, but like he's not afraid of contact at the very least. He sprinkled in some pretty slick interior feeds on some of these drives. Like I want to see how he builds that base out, but he's done a really good job, in my opinion, of just capitalizing on openings and keeping things moving.
I'm intrigued and interested, and I like that you brought up the drives because I have felt like, hey, it's nice that he's mixing these in on top of making shots. Hey, what happens if teams just decide to run him off the line and be physical with him when he puts the ball on the ground? And so, okay, some of these pick and rolls, ball pressure, do I have it? Big's there. Help is there. So I think that's an area of opportunity and growth, and we'll keep an eye on that. But
yeah,
it's interesting to see if he can kind of put the whole package together where I'm knocking down threes and I'm driving closeouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that balance is going to be important. As of recording, I think it's a little over 1.3 points per possession on trips when Cedric Coward gets/attacks a closeout, which is one of the best marks in the NBA as of right now. That is certainly tracked when watching Grizzlies games. Again, he has shot the letter off the ball. The drives have been fun. The cuts have been fun as well. I guess going back to the defense, I would say, at least on the ball, I have loved the effort. You brought up the early ball pressure. And again, Memphis has been a team over the last 2 years that have been one of, you know, the four or five like high pickup point teams in the league, Indiana, Portland, Brooklyn, et cetera. I do kind of cringe is too strong, but it's like, ooh, when he gets some of these matchups, because one, just on a basic level, this is a rookie having to defend Steph Curry or Cade Cunningham or Kevin Durant. It's just like he's just going to lose some of those because of who he is defending. And so on a basic level, like I wish they had someone else that could take those on so you could maybe see some of the off-ball stuff pop a little bit more for him. But I do love that he's up for the challenge. I think for me, as you mentioned the Lakers example, one of the growth areas, when he does get these star matchups, there is a little bit of lingering for him. Like, I have Luka. I am sticking with Luka if I can help it. And that does just kind of open up two on the ball sometimes. And again, very general rookie thing, but it's just like, ooh. This Memphis defense overall hasn't been very good. And, like, I have to, like, technically put some of this on you for some of these breakdowns. But it's also understandable because this is a very tough assignment. Like, I... it's just been an interesting thing for me to kind of balance when like watching him defensively, because I love the effort. I love that he gets these, he has this level of trust from the coaching staff already, but it's also like, I don't know if he should be doing this yet. Like, I don't know how fair this assignment is to him right now.
There's nothing fair about the game of basketball. You got to lock up.
You know what? That's pretty true. It's an unforgiving sport. But I do appreciate that from old Cedric Howard. Do you want to see more on-ball usage for him offensively? I know you mentioned like tracking what the drives and some of the playmaking reps look like for him.
No. I want to see him operate within the flow. I mean, if he's running ahead in transition, if it's a driving kick to him, I don't think you need to now shift more of the offense towards Cedric Coward because he's playing well. Just do more of the things that he's playing well at.
Okay. Last question I have for you on Cedric. At what point does he enter the starting lineup? Or do you want him in the starting lineup? Or are you okay with like high minute come off the bench role?
I mean, for me, he's such a high minute player. How much does it matter? Mm-hmm. And so you have to balance when it comes to these conversations. I'm sure there are Memphis fans that want him inserted into the starting lineup. Okay. Is it Jaren at the five now? And he plays there? Do you lose something off the bench if you start Cedric Coward? Who you taking out? That type of beat.
Okay. All right. Figured out. Pick your brain on that front. Let's get to number three on your list, Steve. So we talked a little bit about on the most recent episode.
Yeah, we sure did. We sure just did. Good timing on my part, I guess.
Hey, listen, you did a darn good job. A lot of evergreen content, it would appear, on the latest episode of the Dunker Spot. But we can talk about that another time. Let's talk more about number one overall pick, Cooper Flagg. As of recording, 14.4 points per game, converting 44% of his twos, 29% of his threes, has not missed a free throw yet so far this year, Steve. But I like that. 6.6 rebounds, 2.8 assists, 1.1 steals, and 0.6 blocks. And I think for me, what he's able to do at his size, just on a baseline, is impressive to me. It's something that popped in summer league for me, the little bit of Duke that I got to catch last year. It's like 6'9", 6'10", you shouldn't have this good of a handle. Like one of the things I noted, you know, opening week is, okay, they're going with this Cooper Flagg at quote unquote point guard experience. Here's some early ball pressure, and it's just, I can just wield you off. A high pick roll is coming. I can reject. I can still get all the way downhill. I can now make a skip to the corners. Like, okay, if he can handle this, that is obviously a positive. Now, again, most recent episode of the Dunker Spot, we talked a little bit about what the overall offensive context is for him and how there is room to make life easier for him, but you're still trying to balance the growth and things like that. Again, listen to that episode. But the fact that he can handle some of this on-ball usage, and to bounce off of what Steve said on that last episode, you have him on ball, you can have him off ball, you can post him up, you can use him as a screener, you can use him as an initiator. Like, that versatility pops, and a lot of that versatility exists because he is this tall, has this frame that he can still grow into. He seeks out contact. He doles out contact on some of these drives. He does a solid job of absorbing contact, either as a driver or when he's playing defense. And he reads the floor pretty darn well for a guy his age. And so, like, that baseline is a big reason why he went number one. And then you add the actual skill on top of that. But, like, I do love that he just has the body for this.
Well, yeah, let's stick there, because I think one of the things is, we talked about it before, and we'll talk about it here in a second, the reads against the vision. The vision's there. Mm-hmm. So he sees the floor. He sees the plays that he can make. And I think that pops as you kind of watch more. Okay, I can make these passes. I can make these plays. Getting a better understanding on how to operate in space against teams that are giving him space, drop coverage, bigs are back. Okay, when do I turn the corner and go all the way? When do I get to my pull-up? And it becomes a world where, okay, it may not be all there. It may not all be there right now. Mm-hmm. But is this a scenario where does one thing open the rest up? Mm-hmm. If he starts making more of those pull-up jump shots, or if he's able to turn the corner and finish more often, does that just open him up? Mm-hmm. Does that make defenses change how they shift? If he's able to kind of get some of these assists because he's making some of these passes,
yeah,
not always knocking it down, does that kind of, like, is there one trigger to where this starts to come together, because you see pieces of it the more you watch him play.
Mm-hmm. And I think for that, like, that's where some of the inside the arc comfort really pops for me, in spite of what some of the percentages are. Like, as of recording, 7 of 20 on off the dribble twos, so pull-ups or step-backs inside the arc. You look at some of the finishing numbers, like, they're solid, but not quite elite, or at least the way you'd expect it to. But I look at some of those rim attempts, just like, okay, that ball just rolled off. But I like that how he got to a spot. I like how he dealt with this contest. He was able to put a clean shot off the backboard. Like, those are things that I expect to get better. And again, as he grows into the frame, like, some of these misses at the rim may just be dunks, like, 3 months from now, much less like a year or two from now. And so that's where I'm kind of projecting, like, oh, no, he's just going to be fine. And, like, the mid-range game in particular is where I am really intrigued. Because I have been tracking, like, okay, what are some of the gathers? What does some of the footwork look like? Like, is he getting into these smoothly? Where are all these Jason Tatum comparisons coming from? But it's just like, okay, no, he can get smoothly into pull-ups going to his right or his left. Like, some of the pure forward momentum stuff is kind of interesting. Some of those pull-up twos and even some of the pull-up threes, and just tracking the footwork there, like, that isn't the most consistent. But it's also, like, the fact that he's taking them is kind of a positive. He does have a sandbox to a degree in Dallas right now, as they've given him the ball and put him in a bunch of contexts. He has room to explore those pull-ups. With the way that he and the Mavericks are being guarded because of the roster context, he certainly has a lot of pull-up opportunities, smile emoji. And so, like, I don't worry too much about that. There is a level of efficiency that he's ultimately going to have to get to for that to really bend what defenses want to do against him. But form-wise, it looks solid to me. Now, any actual shot doctors in the chat or listening, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm open to be wrong, but, like, it seems solid to me. And when you add in what he can do as a driver, you've already mentioned the playmaking, like, there is real three-level plus playmaking potential here for Cooper Flat.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those moments where I like that he's willing to take some of those shots, and it feels a little bit better. Hopefully, going forward, it feels better as far as when he knows he has a shot, when he knows he needs to drive to engage the defense and make a play that way, and just finding the rhythm there. Because I think there are moments where you see he's decisive, makes quick decision. I know what I want to do. I get to my spot. I go. You see other moments where, you know, I think there's a play against New Orleans, so, you know, where I'm denied trying to get a dribble handoff. I turn into a pick and roll. I kind of end up on the side. Okay, the pocket pass should be there. The pocket pass was not there. It's turnover. And so that's just understanding the reads versus, you know, understanding the game. So he's got the knowledge. He's got the vision. And so it's going to get a little bit interesting there. I also want to say the defense has held up. I feel like that has kind of flown under the radar to a degree. I've just liked what he does defensively. He's got size. He can keep the ball in front. And it's good off ball. I feel like he deserves a tip of the cap there.
Okay. I'm glad you brought up the defense, because my literal question to you is going to be, how have you felt about the Cooper Flag defense so far?
Oh, I know.
And she's like, you know me or something. That's crazy. But no, I think with Cooper, I think he has certainly been like rookie good. I think for me, I'm trying to separate with some of the breakdowns with him. I'm trying to decide how much of this is he is a rookie trying to figure things out versus, hey, this is a tough matchup that he has tonight versus this is the roster context. When you also sprinkle in, like, AD's missed time and Lively missed time and Gafford's back now, but Gafford also missed time, and the point of attack defenders aside from him, we will just say are not, they would not be confused with Oklahoma City Thunder members. We'll just put it that way, out of the interest of time. And so, like, how much of the, like, lingering would help is him versus him not trusting the context? How much of the here is a guard, a wing pick and roll that he should switch, but he's hanging a beat too long and trying to, like, jump and time out the pass and deflect it versus just switching off? How much of that is rookie stuff versus I don't really trust the person that is switching on to the good player that I'm already defending? So let me see if I can provide a little extra lead. So, like, it hasn't been super clean all the time for him, but I also don't know how much of this is his fault. Is that fair, or am I just digging a little too deeply into this?
I'm a little too deep, in my opinion. I think here's the thing is, like, you asked me during the preseason preview, hey, who do you want Cooper Flagg to guard? And I was like, I don't think I want him to guard the best players. For a very specific reason. So you arriving at this question is a little funny to your boy. I think for me, I'm more intrigued with a young player in, are you doing the little things? Are you capable of doing little things? Can you understand where you're supposed to be and help? You know, breakdowns are going to occur. There's very few players that are non-breakdown defenders. Very few. So is this a consistent pattern or a mistake? Is this something you can clean up? Can you guard multiple positions? Are you giving up drives all the time? Can you navigate screens? If I feel good about the majority of it, we can clean up the rest.
Yeah.
And so especially when you're a young player, and that's not necessarily your thing to a degree, right? So if you are drafted based on defense and we are having issues on that, that is a higher concern for me. Mm-hmm. So if Cedric Coward was not the level of defender or not giving the type of effort, I would probably be more concerned about that. With Cooper Flagg, this is nice that this is something you're doing well and continue to grow at. So I think that's kind of where I'm at. You know what I mean?
Okay. No, I think that's fair. Like, I think the ideal version of Cooper Flagg is ridiculous defender that can do everything on offense. And so, like, I don't think it is a bad thing if he's just like fine defender in year one, because there's still plenty of time and room for him to grow into ridiculous defender, especially if the context around him gets better and some of the skills that he has, like some of the weak side run protection he can get into, some of the reads that he can make off the ball, they pop a little louder when offense is already a little bit hamstrung at the top layer of possession. So, like, I'm not super concerned. It's just one of those just sitting down and saying, cool, I'm going to watch a ton of Cooper Flagg defensive possessions. It's like, okay, well, this is a little bit more than, like, I thought I was going to see in terms of some of the lingering, in terms of some of, like, closeout paths, just kind of figuring out, okay, where exactly am I going? Which side of the shooter am I closing out to? Stuff like that. Nothing that I'm pressing the big red button on. It's just like, oh, okay, I just kind of had this level baked in. It's probably been like a little bit here so far, but like still rookie good at the end of the day. So I'm glad you brought it up, because I was going to ask you about it. And so if I'm doing too much, then I will just take that on the chin.
No, that's all right. And speaking of doing too much, don't you do too much. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back with some more rookies, folks.
And we are back as we are digging into our first rookie report of the season. We now get to number 4 on Steve's list. I once again say, please read that piece. We go to Dylan Harper, currently out with injury, with a calf injury. He's going to be out for a little bit, so get well soon. But before he went down, averaging 14 points per game, converting 54% of his twos. We like that. 36% of his threes, 83% of his free throws, 4 rebounds, 3.8 assists with a positive assist turnover ratio there, and a shade under a steal per game. Steve, what have you enjoyed most about the Dylan Harper experience so far?
Well, it's unfortunate that he's injured. So salute, hope he gets better. That's not an easy one to deal with. He also is the youngest guard in NBA history to record a game with at least 20 or more points, 5 or more rebounds, 5 or more assists, and 0 turnovers. It's pretty hard to do. It's been the craft that he's shown. It's been the drives that he's showcased. It's been his ability to get downhill and just be a spark for the Spurs offense. And so the footwork that he shows on those drives and the ability to turn the corner and then just stop on a dime. So if he gets you on the side or you're trying to recover, you think you're going to get to the spot, he's decelerating and Euro-stepping his way in the paint and showcasing the ability to finish. The passing, once he gets in the paint, has been really good. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just the fact that, okay, I can get downhill, I can get a paint touch, this could be a finish, I could spray this out to the perimeter, and this is kind of baked in. Now I bring this off the bench and that's fantastic. He just has a poise about him. And so I've enjoyed that. And then the other one I like is the fact that he's able to relocate after the drives as well. Stick on the drives. I think that's important when you're looking at the context of the Spurs, playing alongside Stephon Castle, playing alongside Devin Vassell, playing alongside in the future De'Aaron Fox. That helps you kind of keep a flow going where, okay, I got this paint touch, didn't get what we wanted, but I can get back out. So we get to drive and kick, I get it back. Now, you know, we're rolling, we're putting teams in a tough position defensively. So I've really enjoyed that. That has stuck out with me, just his aggression, his ability to get downhill.
Okay, I like it. I like it. We are aligned in that regard. I have loved the Dylan Harper drives. And as a person that does appreciate a good deceleration, a good slow step on that second step of the gather, him being able to sprinkle these things in already And it's just like going from, I'm going 80 miles per hour, we get the 15, we reel back up to 40. And you just don't know what the cadence is going to be. I love those types of guards. You talk to a huge Shai Gilgeous-Alexander fan, for example. But like, I just love those type of guards. So the fact that he's already sprinkling that stuff in as early as he is, and also has the passing chops to boot, the timing on these passes, the way that he can pair these with these gathers, or can just flat out make the pass on the move before he has to get into a gather. Like, you can never really get a beat on what he's doing. And so, like, that's something that's popped for me early on. And as you know, Steve, I am a big, like, pass placement stickler when it comes to kickouts and stuff like that. Like, okay, it's cool that you saw this. It's cool that you made the pass. Can this person actually take a catch and shoot three off of the pass that you threw them? Because it's only so much grace you can get. Cool that you made the right read. If it can't actually turn into a shot or a drive opportunity, what did you really do? He's passing that test for me so far this year on top of that. So it is driving craft. It is the pass placement. It's the pass timing. Like, he's just really good at getting downhill. And like, some of the possessions with him and Wimby have popped so far this year. So, well, again, echo your sentiments and my own sentiments. I just hope he gets back healthy. You're talking about a lower body injury. I don't want that to sap any of the comfort that he has with some of the cadence changes and stuff like that as a driver. But it's been a fun time for me with Dylan Harper. I guess related to that, Steve, like, how have you felt about, I guess, the non-rim finishing for Dylan Harper? Like, what is he doing in the middle of the floor? Have you enjoyed that portion of the program?
Kinda. What? Have you?
Kinda. I bring it up because, like, it's as I get into, not necessarily like growth area, I guess, would kind of fit here. Like, it, a lot of these actual drive attempts are pretty deep, which works because he is already a solid finisher. I do have some brief, why are we taking left hand layup on right side and kind of presenting the ball to shot blockers type beats.
Okay. So that's kind of popping a little bit. He's left handed.
He is. But it's also, but I've also seen him get like and ones with the right hand this year. It's like, you have it in you. Like, it would be more concerning if I got to walk into this rookie report, like, okay, kind of concerned he can only finish with his hand. The fact that he can finish with both is where I'm like, hey, dog, why are you making this more difficult on yourself? Like, why are we getting a pick roll on the left side, snake it to the right, and now you're going lefty floater against a contest? It's like, you have this in the bag. You have shown us that you have this in the bag. So, like, I think that's something that's going to come up more time, adding a little bit more upper body strength. But, like, yeah, it's small stuff that's popping.
It comes with reps and understanding on the coverage. And so it's one thing to turn the corner and get downhill against whatever the coverage is. Mm-hmm. It's another to get to a spot in the paint, especially depending on who he's playing with, how he drove, how he got there. So for me, I'm not necessarily saying, hey, this is something he has no in-between game. This is not like he's either, you know, taking a shot or a layup or bust type decision for me. Mm. Just something that it'll take some time. And he'll get more reps, hopefully, when he gets back.
Yes. Going to need more reps. I think as of recording 0-3 on off the dribble 2 so far. And so I want to see that perk up a little
bit. It's only three shots.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. I think, again, even baked into that is all of what you said. And again, like, some of the early kickouts that he's making versus let me take pull up 2. So again, like, I want to see more of that just to kind of complement the driving. But I don't call it like a problem area for him. It is just when he gets back, this is something that I'm going to be monitoring. I guess flipping sides, Steve, how have you felt about the Dylan Harper defense so far?
It's been a young player working to play hard. I think the pressure has been fantastic as far as what the Spurs have wanted to do. So being able to keep the ball in front and be consistent on that end has been great. What have you thought about the defense, the guys?
I think it's mostly been okay for him. Like, it's a little bit of like getting hung up on screen sometimes. I'm tracking some of the recovery paths for him. But box number one for me is, do you want to? And it appears the answer is yes on that front. So I take that for my young guards, especially the ones that have offensive talent who may just be like, oh, well, I don't really need to do this. Let me hit this baseline level. I'm cool. So the fact that he has this compete level, it's him, it's Stephon Castle. It's like they just want to get after it. I appreciate that part from him. And I think in general, as he gets more upper body strength in particular, I think that's where you gets hit in chest, arms come down, here's a foul. It's like, oh no, you were at the spot, but you're now no longer in a legal guarding position. Like, some of that stuff should just get better as he gets stronger. So not super concerned on that front. little bit more attentive off the ball. But as you mentioned, like, that is just going to be general rookie stuff that I'm sure I'll be able to say multiple times throughout this episode. So nothing exclusive to him. But ultimately, I am fine with what I've seen from Dylan Harper so far this year.
Fantastic.
So I've been we did it. Once again, get well soon, Mr. Harper. Let's move to Charlotte, Steve. Number five on your list was Con Knipple. As of recording, averaging 14.8 points, converting 55% of his twos. We like that. 41% of his threes. We really like that. 82% of his free throws. That's solid. 5.8 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 0.5 steals so far. And it starts with the off-ball feel for me. Like, very similar to what I said about Cedric Howard. Just has a high level of spatial awareness. Just knows where he needs to be, when I need to slide, how far I need to slide. Timing out some of these, not just, you know, corner to wing or wing to corner relocations. Some of the cuts on top of that, if it's open, especially when he's in the corner. All of that has felt good to me. And when he gets a kick out, one, he's shooting the leather off the ball, as I just referenced, shooting 41% from three. But he already has, like, the side step into one or two dribble pull-ups to his bag. You fly by, I can get to my left or my right and comfortably reset and knock down these shots. And I think that just adds such a boon to the Charlotte offense. So I kind of start with the off-ball work with Con. What have you liked?
Well, I mean, let's stick there. I think one of the things that you have to appreciate is just the understanding he has in the game. So when he's spaced on the perimeter, when you watch the Hornets, he does such a great job of sliding into an open area. So if another player is driving the basketball and forcing help, he's not just static. He's not sitting waiting for the cut. I'm going to slide into your vision to make sure I can either get a shot or I can drive and keep the advantage. And that's really valuable, especially for someone who's making a bunch of shots. I mean, he, I believe, was the first player in NBA history with three or more made threes in each of his first four games. And he recorded the most made threes. It was 22 through seven games of any player in NBA history. So
seems good.
If you like any sort of nuggets of fun facts, there you go. But I think the off-ball package has been fantastic. It's just the little things for me. I think when you watch Con Knipple, it just feels like he can do a little bit of everything. And that's important for Charlotte. I think on both ends of the floor, being able to just have a consistency and keep things moving. You mentioned the off-ball. On-ball, he probes. But if he doesn't have anything, I'm going to get off of it. And he does a really good job of flowing into these guard screens where he's on the perimeter, and I get right into it. And what he does a great job of, one, he runs into these screens.
Yes, he does.
With a good pace. Now, the idea behind running into those screens is I'm going to get my defender on the move. Because it's two guards or a wing and a guard, it's usually a switch for most teams. Mm-hmm. And so the next thing, you know, you get him on the move, it's a little harder to switch. The next thing he does, and this is not a new basketball concept, but I'm going to place myself in a position, get a touch on you, who is defending the ball, and then slip out before you can switch and before my man thinks that he doesn't have to switch. And that opens up his ability to roll and get into the paint and kind of get some floaters or get some driving kick going. And I've just appreciated that little wrinkle because it's not like it's always a set for Charlotte. It's something where, okay, we can get this from the floor of the offense and we can kind of open things up to create an advantage. I think that's important for this team. So you mix that in with his, you know, not afraid to turn the corner. And so when he's in those kind of screening actions, now they can flare for him. And now he can get a shot that way. It just kind of builds up. So I've enjoyed the Con Knipple overall.
No, I like that. I like that. To this point, Steve, he has set 93 on-ball screens. With one of the higher marks among this rookie class already. I think Cooper Flagg's at 24 right now if we're just talking about difference of usage. But those ghosts have been so impactful for the Charlotte offense. Even if he doesn't make the shot, it's just something else that defenses have to think about. And I'm glad that you mentioned the flare point because what they're building off of those flares in particular has been a lot of fun. And which brings me to, he's just got some juice as a driver, Steve. Like you mentioned him being able to turn the corner, but like he takes you with him on these drives. Like he is not at all afraid of you attaching to his side. Like I will play through this contact. I'll get into a little bit of foul drawing craft. I want to see that grow for him. But you get into a little bit of that. And just in general, like if he is spaced somewhere or he gets a flare, the ball finds to him, like him in empty side actions is something that I've liked. And when the ball goes out of bounds in any capacity against Charlotte, you can expect he is running off of some sort of stagger getting to his left or some kind of screening action that gets him to like that left corner, left wing, immediate screen or immediate pitch to him. And now it's him and like Ryan Kalkbrenner. It's him and Musa Diabate. It's him and Big with an empty side. And you have to decide, what exactly are we doing? And like the placement and the timing of some of those passes in those short areas. Again, is it enough for me to say I want to see Khan run 30 pick and rolls a game? Like, not quite yet. But the fact that he sees it, he reads it, and like the placement on some of the lobs and on some of these pocket passes, the velocity on some of these pocket passes, giving his bigs a chance on those. It's like, you know what? I like this from Khan Kniffel. Like, that's just enough complimentary juice on the ball to really supplement what he's doing off of it as a spacer, as you mentioned, the relocations and things like that. So he's got some stuff offensively, just period, that I've really enjoyed. It is time for my favorite question, Steve. How have you felt about the Khan Kniffel defensive experience?
What I like about Khan Kniffel on defense is that he's very good off ball to a degree. I think he attempts to pressure. The screen navigation can get a little interesting, but he does his job, Nikias. What have you thought about the defense?
I think it's going to be my last defense question to Steve on this podcast. But no, I think some of the nail help has been interesting. That's mostly been like a Charlotte thought that I've had. It seems like as the season's gone on, they've wanted to just bring more of that. And so just kind of tracking how early he's in, what the recoveries look like for him on that front, he does seem to work at it. So like that part's been fine. As you mentioned, the screen navigation can get kind of funny. But like he's never giving up on plays. And like I have like some of like the veer switch that he sprinkled in on some of these. So like I like that the motor is there for him defensively. That's just going to have to continue to build out. Those are my very quick thoughts on the Khan Kniffel defensive experience.
So here's the thing real quick, what I'll say. Young guards usually have the same issues defensively, mm-hmm. 80% of them. So for me, I'm giving them grace as they develop these traits and understand, when do I show help on the weak side? When do I rotate? How do I handle these matchups? How do I get over screens? All of them kind of have the same issue outside of the elite rookie defenders whose defense gets highlighted. So that's it for me.
Understood. With that, we can move to Jeremiah Fears, another rookie guard, in which I will not ask you how you feel about his defense. I will let you volunteer that.
I'm gonna ask you. Yeah, bud.
All right. Well, while we're here, Jeremiah Fears, 13.3 points, 50% on twos, 30% from three, 81% from the line, 2.9 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.4 steals to start the year. Steve, what have you liked from Jeremiah Fears so far?
The fact that he literally has no fear offensively, wherever he needs to get to, he's going to try and get there. And I think for me, the one part has been the shiftiness that he showcases offensively and the hesitate and go that he has in high pick and roll. That's been fun to watch. Mm-hmm. There's a dynamic where obviously, you know, I have the ball in my hands. I like that they're mixing in a little bit more like pass and catch, a little pitch action for him to get mm-hmm. downhill in a different way. But yeah, if he gets space, you don't know if it's going to be a runner. You don't know if it's going to be a floater. You don't know if it's going to be a pull-up, a step back, he's turning the corner. But you know the attacks there offensively. And so does that help grow to make plays? We will see, but the opportunity is there for him to succeed. And I think the dynamic portion is like Zion Williamson obviously out for a quick minute. Mm-hmm. But it would be funny to watch like Zion get the ball, defense help, Jeremiah Fears makes defense pay. Jeremiah Fears then calls angle for himself to operate in pick and roll at the top of the floor and then turns the corner and finishes. That's just a confidence from a young player that you don't always see. So I have appreciated that.
Okay. I like it.
What
like,
say you, Nikias?
Well, first is defense. No, I'm just kidding. But no, in all seriousness, like the drives have been something that's popped for me since summer league play. It's like, okay, he can just get into the paint or all the way to the rim pretty much whenever he wants to. And from there, it's just tracking, okay, what is the finish type that you're getting into here? Like, how are you dealing with contact? Are you rushing some of these shots at the rim? But like, he gets there. And I just feel like he's just going to be a really good finisher at the NBA level. Like, getting there is literally half the battle. But I like the way he gets downhill. And I think you've already alluded to, just it's not always 100 miles per hour for him when he does want to get downhill. Like, there is a level of shiftiness. There is an altering of the cadence for him to where defenders can't really get a beat on him. And so having that in your bag and then also just having a top gear that not many defenders can deal with, it just gives you a high baseline. And so just watching the consistency from him is going to be fun. The passing is going to be interesting. Like, there is just a baseline level of aggression that he has. And so there is like a volume deal. But I do generally like the way that he reads the floor. particularly in ball screens. Like, he sees stuff. The passing placement has kind of given me a little bit of pause with some of these kickouts, but it's also just like, I'm glad that he sees it. And I think with more reps, that should just naturally get better. But that is something that's kind of popped out as I was just watching a whole bunch of his passes and pick and roll reads and stuff yesterday. It's just like, okay, I'm glad he saw this corner kick. I'm sure Herb Jones doesn't like picking up this pass from like his shin. Like, that's probably not what he wants. Or kick the Trey Murphy the third. Like, I don't think he wants to reach all the way out here to then bring it up into like the quick release. But again, he's figuring stuff out. And the fact that he sees it is a positive. And as he gets more comfortable inside the arc and as these passes get better, like, those are going to be more assist opportunities for him naturally. Like, I just think he's going to be a dynamic guard. So I've liked the experience offensively for the most part.
Hey, Nikias, how have you felt about Jeremiah Fear's defense?
I'm glad you asked, Steve. He is incredibly active, which I think at a basic level is a good thing. And something that I've joked with you about on this very podcast this season is that I appreciate the Pelicans, saying, cool, Jeremiah Fears is in and or Jose Alvarado is in. They just played the Hornets. So it's top of mind for me. Watch that game. But, okay, Jose and or Jeremiah Fears is in the game. We are now going to pick you up darn near behind half court. And let's see what you do with it. So, like, some of the ball pressure from Jeremiah Fears has been fun. It's one of those, like, it's cool when he doesn't, and then if there's a hint of a screen, he like tries to duck under and reattach. Like, those get kind of funny for him, but that's natural. And you have the similar bit, you get a guard screen, like he's just kind of hanging a little bit too long. So like those kind of things kind of pop for me. Off the ball, he's more fun than I anticipated, because when I think like rookie non-elite defender, it is going to be, he's going to be ball watching, he's going to stare stuff down, oh no. And it's not really a ton of that, at least not yet, and I hope it doesn't get to that point. He's made some really cool reads. Like, he is flying in from the weak side to challenge lobs. I'm just like, okay, he is fearless. We can make the jokes there. But, like, the fact that you see that stuff and you are willing to react to those kind of things, I like that from him. Like, I think perimeter players and guards in particular that can provide any kind of value, as, like, a low-man defender, like, I generally like those guys. So I want to see how that builds out with more rep and more time. But I've been kind of intrigued by the off-ball deal with Mr. Fears.
Third on the Pelicans in deflections per game. Job well done. And I just wanted to warm you up for our next rookie that we're going to discuss.
Ah, yes. Okay, well, then we can move to Toronto. Number 7 on your list, Colin Murray-Boyles. As of recording, 9.2 points per game, 49% on twos. Roughly 43% from three so far, Steve. Low volume, but he's knocking down threes. That was a question heading in. 71% from the line, 3.3 rebounds, nearly two of those on the offensive glass, 1.3 assists, and a steal per contest. Buddy, let me tell you, you give me a forward that can defend multiple positions, can make short roll reads, or just can pass the ball in general, like, I am just kind of in as a concept. Like, you have to prove to me that you are bad, as you have joked about plenty of times throughout the history of this podcast, watch parties, etc. Like, I have types, playmaking wing, the passing big. Yeah. What I like, you know.
And Colin Murray-Boyles is your type, and I was surprised that he was not your favorite in this rookie class so far. Big wing, does it all defensively, room for growth. Go ahead, because I've been waiting for this moment.
Steve, I am glad that not only is he playing, he's getting a lot of minutes as of late. Like, watching him and Scottie Barnes defend together has just been a joy, which I mentioned RJ Barrett a little bit earlier. Hey, the Toronto Raptors, like, starting to stack some wins and starting to look like a basketball team on both ends. So that's pretty cool. We'll sprinkle that in. But Colin Murray-Boyles has been a joy to watch. Like, we laughed, I think, a couple episodes ago, when he had that welcome to the NBA moment against Steven Adams with the early seal. He just could not do anything with that size. But again, we'll defend a little bit of everyone, like spend some time on KD in the Rockets matchup. Can make really good reads off the ball defensively. Active hands. I like the way that he does fight when trying to deal with post-ups. He has really good footwork. Is able to swim, get in front. He can challenge passes. Can high point the ball if you try to throw those entries. So like that stuff is there. Him as a screener, like, I want the screens to be a little bit better, but like it is still solid. And if you give him any kind of space to operate in a 4-on-3 or 3-on-2 or 2-on-1, he's generally making the right decisions there. And if the 3-point shot is real at all, Steve. Hey, man. I'm already just in as a concept, but I'm just all the way in if he can actually knock down threes. Again, low volume. I think it's, what, 6 or 14 from three so far this year. But if the shot is comfortable, he does just about everything else. Again, not a perfect player, but like I've enjoyed the Colin Murray Bulls experience, and I will pass the mic to you. What have you enjoyed about OCMB?
There we go. Well, I'm glad you're excited, and I did remember a lot of this when Ryan Dunn was playing well early on last year, so I'm going to keep that in the back of my brain. Yeah. I think the biggest thing with Colin Murray Boyles is just the physicality and aggression that he plays with defensively, mm-hmm. and the activity that he has to be disruptive on that end. And so it's just not easy to try and get a drive against him. He has really quick hands. He's got good size. And he's bothering you. So even if you do beat him off the bounce, he's going to find a way to work to recover and try and contest. Mm-hmm. I think being able to showcase that he can guard multiple positions is key. I think the off-ball timing, as far as you mentioned watching the Raptors play defense together, his timing as far as being able to help them when they're beat on drives and kind of contain things is big for the Raptors' defense. So you mentioned the screening. I love that they can get him in towards the five. I think that helps them contribute. I think that gives them a dynamic roller to a degree. And so I just like that that's an aspect that they can throw out there. Mm-hmm. To the three-point shooting, when it comes to a young player who doesn't necessarily come in with the tag of a shooter, I am more intrigued to see how many do you want to take? How are you taking them? What's the confidence level like? Mm-hmm. So if you're willing to take them and you can mix in some timely makes, that's important to me. That's good development. If you lose confidence, and now you're passing those up, that's where the regression kind of hits. So I think finding that balance, finding that confidence is going to be important for him going forward. But it's hard to not enjoy just that dog that he brings every single night for the Raptors.
Yeah, he fits in tremendously into like the level of toughness and aggression that they want to play with. again, I've just enjoyed it. I guess the question that I'll toss to you is I mentioned like him and Scottie playing together. The numbers on that, at the very least, not great, particularly defensively. It's pretty much a 129 defensive rating with those two on the floor together. Like, I don't think that's all their fault. And teams are just shooting incredibly well from three in those minutes so far. Low sample. But, like, how much five do you want to see him play right now? I think the ideal version of him is someone that can operate at that level and make those short roll decisions, et cetera. But I could also understand, as he like grows to the body, as he's learning more about NBA offenses and defenses, that you don't want a high dosage of it. Do you feel like the Raptors have kind of found an ideal blend or ideal volume of him at the five in particular?
Well, I think we're going to find out because if Jakob Poeltl's there and Mamu's playing like this, there are only so many minutes at the five.
Yeah.
And so I think I would much rather him be able to do both for his growth opportunity. Mm-hmm. Then just be, okay, I can do all the defense things. I only work offensively as a five. And now you're stuck there into vision.
No, don't, you know don't, what I mean? Don't, no? Okay. Don't, no, we don't need to, no, no, this has been a positive segment. We don't have to do that. But no, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, to your point, this is where the microscope on the shot in particular becomes more important, especially if he is going to be at the four. Like, it does feel like when he is kind of your four, like, teams are still willing to put fives on him to kind of roam off of stuff like that. He does have to be willing to take those shots in rhythm. It can't be catch, hold, quick hitch, and like, well, I guess I have to take it now type beat. It's like, I love that I haven't seen many of those. The shot does just look smoother now compared to like some of the South Carolina tape. And again, I say that as someone, I am not a J. Kyle man or someone that is doing a whole bunch of draft work. So take that with a grain of salt if you like. But it does seem smoother. And like that breeds a little bit more confidence for me at the very least on that front. And so I'm excited to see what that looks like. And just in general, the partnership between him and Scottie. Like, I know the numbers, they've lost those minutes, but I do love the ideal of that. And those guys being able to toggle roles on both ends, honestly. So I've just enjoyed what I've seen from him so far. I want to see the minutes tick up as much as they can. As you mentioned, Jakob Poeltl is back, and hopefully he's able to stay healthy. Like, back stuff with athletes, period, is scary. Back stuff for centers, it's like you just don't want to play around with that because of the rigors of the job. And so I just hope he's able to stay upright. I'm glad you shouted out Mamu. Good stuff. We're just going to turn this into a Raptor segment is what this feels like.
No. This is the rookie report, not the Raptor report.
That's a good bar. That's a good one. That's a good one. You know what? We'll leave it there. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we finish out the top 10 of Steve's rankings and we get into some quick shout outs. And we are back on the Dunker Spot. We're going to wrap up the final three of Steve's top 10 rankings and then get to some shout outs and then talk a little unrivaled after that. Number eight on the list, we have Wizards guard Trey Johnson, currently averaging 11.6 points per game, converting 47% of his twos, 36% of his threes. Also has not missed a free throw yet, though low volume. 3.1 rebounds, 1.5 assists, though 1.5 turnovers with that. 0.8 blocks per game so far for Trey Johnson. Steve, what have you enjoyed about the Trey Johnson experience so far?
Basketball is a beautiful thing, Nikias. Mm-hmm. And there are a few things I appreciate more. As much as I love defense, as much as I love teamwork, I love a bucket getter. And I love a bucket getter who's got a clean jump shot that looks the same almost every time. And you just don't know how they're going to get to their shot, but you know they're going to. Mm-hmm. And that is Trey Johnson. I believe he was at one point averaging 11 field goal attempts a night in 25 minutes of action. And that made me laugh. That gave me a good chuckle because he's got zero hesitation and he's got a quick release. And so if you give him any space on the perimeter, letting it fly, if you do close out to him when he's spaced out on the perimeter, sidestep three. If it is pick and roll and you give him space, pull up three. Or I can turn the corner and finish in with a floater. Or I can get to a different kind of pull-up. Mm-hmm. And so I just appreciate the aggression and the mindset as far as I can get this off quick. I know I can. I got time. It's gone. You got to deal with it. The way that he works to change speeds to kind of operate on different levels of the floor has been fun. Mm-hmm. And of his, he's taken 82 shots this year, right, Nikias? Mm-hmm. 44 are threes.
Okay.
33 of those are above the break. Mm-hmm. 14 are mid-range. And 21 are in the paint, non-restricted area. So, yeah, I'm going to get to where I need to get to get this up.
You know what? That's fair. I will say, like, on the Trey stuff, I'll start positive first. He is absolutely a bucket getter and has that aggressive mindset. And I love the shot in the myriad of ways that he can get to the shot. The shooting touch just pops on film. Like, when he makes shots, the ball very rarely is hitting the rim. Or even parts of the net is dropping straight through. Like, very pure shooter, very pure scorer. And that tracks with what the word was with him coming out of college. The fact that he already has, like, a no-dip three in this film made me laugh as an avid 2K player. And it's like, he held down the left trigger. That's funny. But, like, he does not mind getting to these shots. And I think the interior craft is where it gets a little interesting for me because he can get to these shots. Like, I have worried a little bit about, I guess, like, the elevation on some of these. Like, he has to work pretty hard to get to some of these looks, but because he has the shooting touch that he has, he's still able to make his fair share of them. And so I do wonder, like, as he builds strength, like, what are some of the nudges before the shot going to do for him, and what is that going to do for his efficiency? Like, I think there's real low-hanging fruit in that regard. I think my, like, areas of growth for Trey is really everything before the shot, at least when it comes to the on-ball reps. I think because of, like, more so like the strength stuff than the burst stuff. But I think in trying to counter some of that, he gets the ball for a pick and roll. He is jetting out of there. And as you mentioned, can then change speeds once he gets inside the arc. But, like, I don't feel like he gives his screeners a chance as often as he could with some of these, which could thus make his scoring opportunities even easier. And some of the playmaking reps even more fruitful, which I will quickly say, as I was just watching a whole bunch of Trey Johnson pick and roll on Wednesday, him sprinkling in a little bit of eye manipulation is kind of interesting to me. High pick and roll, let me snake, let me stare down the corner and toss this ball to the wing. And it's just like, oh, like, pass placement isn't perfect. And it's like, oh, he's, like, trying to, like, move people with his eyes. Like, that's not generally what you see from, like, pure bucket getter archetype. It's more so, I score so much, you send two, and I can make the basic reads from there. Like, the fact that he is, like, trying to play with defenders, not super high volume, but it's like, that's intriguing to me. I want to see him continue to build off of that. Like he's had a few of those where I was like, okay, it's in there. Can we get that volume up? But like pick and roll setups are probably gonna be like the biggest thing for me with him right now. Like give your screeners a chance to get set and thus get into the snakes and get into the pull-ups and things like that. I think that will come with time, but that is something that's kind of popped on film for me. Do you have any particular growth areas for Mr. Johnson?
Well, I think the key there is get him off more handoffs. I think that helps you clean that up. Get him on the move. I think that if you're a scoring shifty guard and you get it and you're waiting for a screen, it's kind of easy to try and attack, get the defense off balance and put yourself at a different spot. When they get him downhill off pin downs or they get him handoffs, I think it's very clean and he knows the space to operate and can attack. So I think that's an easy way to clean that up.
Okay. I think that's fair. I would add, I guess to that point, Steve, like it does feel like his actual usage has been kind of inconsistent throughout the year. Like it has been like, we're going to space you and you can attack from there versus like a steady dose of intentional like off-ball stuff for handoffs. So I do wonder, that's also just him coming off the bench. So I don't know if he ends up starting at any point this year and then to get more intentional on that front, but we'll see what happens there. Other inside the arc point that I want to make, similar to like the shrimp point, he does not seem comfortable playing off of 2 feet right now. At least that particular gather. And like, I think as you cited, like how many shots he's taken from three, how many he's taken from mid range, how many he's taken in the paint. He has not taken a lot of shots at the rim so far this year. And so like him getting to that layer, I think some of that is just going to be strength and dealing with guys, you know, right inside of him, stuff like that. The other part of that is like just the lack of like vertical pop, at least for me so far. And like how he chooses to deal with that moving forward is going to be interesting to track. Cause I think as he adds that level, like he does have like a couple of reps in this film where he's legit getting into like some rip through stuff or some like awkward timing to try to lean into a body and draw fouls. Like he has the mind for it. You just kind of want the body and the actual technique to kind of match up with that. So that's something that I'm keeping an eye on. And I'll quickly sprinkle in on the defense point. Like he certainly competes on that end, but it's mostly like when you switch, are you hanging there too long or are you getting out of there? When in ice, like how are you setting up that ball handler? How are you funneling them down the sideline? Like that's those kind of things I think are growth areas for him. But like you also watch that Wizards defense overall. It's just like there are a lot of growth areas for a lot of the young players there so far. So like that is not exclusive to Trey, but wanted to empty the notes on that front. But he's a fun player so far.
I'm glad you emptied the notes.
There we go.
What's next?
There we go. We move to Ryan Kalkbrenner in Charlotte. We go back to the Queen City. As of recording, 9.1 points, converting nearly 83% of his twos. And he like started the season just not missing a shot. So that was fun. 71% from the line right now on low volume. 7.1 rebounds, but 3.3 on the offensive glass. 0.6 assists, 1.6 turnovers. You don't love that. 1.3 steals, 2.4 blocks for Ryan Kalkbrenner. And I think for me with him.
No. Ask me the question. Ask me the question. You've been asking all day. Ask it. Ask me the question.
I have permission. Okay. Hey, Steve, how have you felt about Ryan Kalkbrenner's defense?
Tremendous.
Okay.
Second in the league in blocks per game. And so I think for me, what you see with Ryan Kalkbrenner is not just height. You see incredible timing and feel, which is not easy for a big man, especially a young big man. Mm-hmm. So you see someone where if you watch him and he defends pick and roll back, he's in a drop, he's in the pit. And so when you watch the Hornets, he's going to be back there. And there are times where he looks like he's almost on the side of the play. And so if you're a ball handler, you think, okay, I can turn the corner on this. And then somehow he like almost is like a magnet towards the spot he needs to be at to meet you near the rim and then contest it and get a piece on it. So it might just be straight up. It might be before he gets to the glass. Either way, he erases that space very quickly. Mm-hmm. The verticality challenges I've liked as far as just going straight up, that's a skill that not everyone can possess and do very much. But that timing is really good. And so having that open lane and being able to take it away is huge. And so even if they think they have a speed advantage, and okay, if I just take the space real quick, I can get something up on him real quick. Nope. He gets back, gets to a spot, make it a tough contest, or get a block. Think the pocket pass is there. Nope. I'm going to get right back to that position where I know they're going to shoot the ball. I'm going to get a contest and block. Him operating at the dunker spot has been profitable for him, so that's been good. I think, to me, the interesting part with the turnovers is, so Charlotte attempts to flow, have him spaced, dribble handoffs. Well, we're just going to deny everyone. Well, hey, guys, what do I do? Oh, so that's I beat. But, yeah, I figured since you've been asking, how's defense? I wanted to answer how the defense is.
Hey, listen, I'm glad that I could do that for you, Steve. Good stuff on the Ryan Kalkbrenner defense. We'll quickly add to your point about the way that he challenges things at the rim. As of recording, he's leading the NBA in contested shots per game at 12.3. He's contesting 10.5 twos, which is also tops in the NBA. Also per NBA tracking data, team shooting about 60% at the rim against Ryan Kalkbrenner, which you want that to be lower. But compared to Charlotte centers of years past, I think you take that, and you especially take that as a rookie with obvious room to grow. And so it's been a solid start to the year for Ryan Kalkbrenner defensively. I'm with you there. Offensively, I'm glad you mentioned just the usage in general, like what he's doing at the dunker spot. I think the screens have been pretty good for him. Sub elite, but I think they've been fine. And like the hub work from him has been interesting. And I do think, to your point, he has been kind of not necessarily left out to dry. It's just more, you know, defenses have done a good job, because Charlotte doesn't have like a full cast of incredibly strong like perimeter players. If we talk about Khan, he deals well with contact generally, but like you still can blow up some of these guys. And so it kind of turns into, hey, I'm going to force this handoff. Here's a deflection. Oh no. Or let me try to hit this cut. It's like, oh no, I'm glad you see it, but no. Do some of those opportunities turn into, you know, this is kind of like you're running around me where I'm kind of at the elbow. Can this turn into like a pseudo post up or one or two dribbles into a jump hook? Can we see that more often? Like, I'm curious to see what that looks like and what kind of freedom he has offensively as a scorer. Like, I don't think we're going to get to like Ryan taking like a bunch of threes, at least not yet. So I'm not holding my breath on that portion of the program, but the touch has been there. Like, he's sprinkling in a whole bunch of jump hooks. Like, he's a very obvious lob threat. And again, as you mentioned, lurking around the dunker spot, roaming those areas, going from dunker to middle flash has been fun for him.
Correct.
So you've just gotten good stuff. And Charlotte has gotten good stuff out of Ryan Kalkbrenner to start the year. So I've enjoyed the experience. Keep an eye with him on space, though. That can get kind of funny defensively. All right, Steve. Number 10 on the list. We go back to New Orleans. It's time to talk about Derrick Queen. Averaging 8.4 points per game. Converting 50% of his twos. Hasn't made a three yet, but he's taken a handful. 75% from the line. 5.5 rebounds, 1.6 offensive rebounds, 1.3 assists, 1.3 steals, 0.5 blocks, and about 19 minutes per game off the bench. What have you liked most about the Derrick Queen experience so far, Steve?
The passing. I think that's been the most fun part of what Derrick Queen has brought to the table. Obviously, with Zion Williamson out, we're going to get to see a glimpse of more of Derrick Queen consistently. So I think, you know, everyone likes to kind of go in the pantry and grab the hub seasoning and pour it on the tall person.
Are you a and big that made a pass? Hub.
Yeah, people can get real heavy-handed with that sometimes. But I do think Queen has showcased some passing ability as far as when they are in movement, and the Pelicans need all the movement they can get offensively. Mm-hmm. But you hit him, whether he's on the wing or whether he's at the top of the key, he can fire some of these passes late. He can lead you into a play, which is good for a player like Trey Murphy. But I can, if you curl, I can throw that bounce pass. If you curl and you're late open, I can get that ball to you. So he just has a knack and he sees the floor well, and that's what I enjoy the most. Can the passing potential open things up for New Orleans? Can that make him have an impact? And then if they're going to have that kind of space and that kind of movement, does that open up more opportunities for Derrick Queen to drive and showcase some of the skill that he has, some of the nifty footwork, some of the craft he has as far as being able to attack, hit first, and finish. Now, it's going to be very interesting to see how does he handle shot selection in this scenario. Mm-hmm. Is he getting downhill? Is he finishing? Is he getting stopped on a drive? Is he settling for a fadeaway or a mid-range? That could get interesting. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if we're gonna let him operate and player off of them and he can grab and go on rebounds and throw the ball ahead, I think there's a lot of fun things that could happen. I think he's got a lot of skill. And so it'll be fun to watch him do it in New Orleans.
Okay. Well, speaking of New Orleans, literally coming through the pipeline from Chris Haynes, New Orleans Pelicans say Jordan Poole will be reevaluated in 7 to 10 days after being diagnosed with a mild left vastus lateralis strain. Okay. Quad strain for Jordan Poole. So we'll see him in a week, I suppose. Hopefully I can read. If not, I have just become a meme. Great. But anyway, to the Derrick Queen portion of the program. I'm glad you started with the passing, because I was going to start with the passing if you didn't. That brother sees so much on the floor, Steve. And as we joked about a little bit earlier, like, give me a big that can pass, a big that can handle. I'm in. Some of the college film pop, just like, okay, I think I'm going to like this dude when I actually watch him. Then it's like injury, and it's like, oh no. But now he's here. And he's hitting cutters, and he's hitting these curls, and he's throwing these transition hit aheads. It's just like, hey, this is something that you can build off of offensively.
Correct.
And if yes. And then if we get into the shot creation bag, as you mentioned, some of the drives that I think for you, I think popped in during preseason play, or excuse me, summer league play, if I remember correctly. But you get into some of those drives, and if he gets into some of these like push shots and floaters, again, has not made a three yet, but like at least isn't afraid to take them. If that builds out, like you do just have a potential like foundational piece offensively. We should take pressure off of those guards. We should take some pressure off of Zion. Like, it's easy to envision what some of those high lows could look like. For example, Zion starts in the corner, curls in, early seal. Here's Derek Queen hitting him. Like, you have some stuff to play with here. Then we get to the defense for Derek Queen. And I'm just kind of like, I'm just a big bowl of right now. Because, like, I watch him in, like, I watch him when he's in some of the deeper drops. I'm just like, I don't really love this. And then guards get space, and then guards attack him at the rim, and guards don't seem to care about him at the rim. And I was like, oh no. But then you sprinkle in some of these like quote unquote higher drops, or he's closer to the level, and then it turns into a late switch. It's like, okay, wait, he's now absorbing his drive, flashing the hands, can get a strip. Now you can contest. I'm like, okay, is this just going to be more of an activity-based deal for Derek Queen? Let's see what this looks like. Go ahead.
Did you say higher drop?
Hashtag high drop.
No. If he's near the level of the screen, that's a different coverage. If it's a late switch, that's a different coverage. There's no such thing as a high drop.
I just wanted to pick at you a little bit. But my general point is that when he is not in the deep drop, I've been kind of intrigued by what some of those reps look like. And if we're doing early sample, I think he's defended 95 pick and rolls as a screener defender. It's like 0.87 points per possession. I'm just like, oh, that is an elite number. Watching them, I don't know if I believe in that, especially once you factor in like the actual like rim numbers against Derek Queen. But like, I'm kind of intrigued, because if you're able to find a coverage that he's comfortable with, again, naturally you want to be able to do multiple things. But if you're able to find a base for him, that gives him more opportunity to do the offense stuff. He grabs a board, it's out, that he can bring it up, et cetera. So I want to see what that looks like with a larger sample and with more consistent playing time. I don't understand how he just ended up playing like the boo-boo minutes against OKC. Like, they didn't need him. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. I like Derek Queen, Steve. And they need him to play well, because if he doesn't, then we're just going to be talking about that trade a whole bunch, and that's not super fair to him. But
y'all are going to be talking. You people are going to be talking about that trade. That's what you're going to be doing.
What do you
we're going to be talking about something else.
Okay. Well, there you go. But I've enjoyed the Derek Queen experience. Did you have Derek Queen defense thoughts? I guess I'll ask you that one to close this up.
No, I think you nailed it, man.
Okay.
Good job.
Thanks. I tried my best. Any quick shout outs, any honorable mentions? I would quickly like to say, as we talked about two Charlotte Hornet rookies, I'd just like to say the name of Cion James, who has flown around defensively and crashed off into glass. He's knocked down some timely corner threes. Some of the drives have been fun. He's just winning basketball player, and Charlotte can just use those. It's the reason he got a random like spot start. I just like watching Cion James play basketball. He's going to raise the intensity level for them defensively. And quickly, Will Richard for Golden State. Shooting 50% from three, just doing a little bit of everything. I'll crash the offensive glass if you need me to. I'll knock down these spot ups. I'll take on tough defensive assignments. I'll draw charges. Just a fun role piece that did not take long for Steve Kerr to take a liking to. And based on the current production so far, it is hard to blame him. So I wanted to say the names of Cion James and Will Richard. Did you have any quick shout outs that you want to get to before you move?
I only want to shout out Hugo Gonzalez for defending multiple players and being a general madman on the basketball court, which fits into what Joe Mazzulla likes. I wanted to salute that. James, it's been hard. He just makes winning plays out there for Charlotte, so it's been good. Keep an eye on Utah to see what the Walter Clayton and Ace Bailey of it all becomes here over the course of the season. But other than that, it would be fantastic, and I would salute that there. You know what I mean?
Okay. There we go. The rookies are done. Steve, we'll be back next month to talk about 10 more. And we're going to have some fun.
We sure will. And you know what, Nakai's? You know what else is back? Unrivaled on the way back, they announced their full rosters, Nikias. So we're going to start with the Rose BC, Chelsea Gray, Shug Sutton, Kalia Copper, Lexi Hull, Azrae Stevens, and Shakira Austin. What do you think of the makeup of this roster, Nikias?
You got to respect the champs. I think in a three-on-three setting, this is where the Chelsea Gray can just get you into the torture chamber. Here are all these middies. Here are all these pull-ups. Here are all these threes. Kalia Copper, the cutting pops more in this context, as does the drives. You can't crowd her space, which means she can just get to the rim easier. Some of the pull-ups that we saw from Lexi Hull end up being like a precursor to some of the shot-making that we saw from her during the Fever season last year, so that was fun. The Azrae Stevens of it all last unrivaled season, when she got usage, it's like, oh, cool. She could do literally everything. But then there are also these pockets where she didn't really get the ball like that. And it's just, hey, let's get her in space. And it's like, oh, well, this isn't super ideal. It's where you really felt like Angel Reese's presence on top of the good that she did on last year. And so I'm curious to see, like, with no Angel on this team, like, what that is going to look like now. Do you see building more of the boat around Azrae Stevens offensively, some of the passes she could do, some of the shooting, et cetera? It's still a good roster, Steve. Like, they deserve your respect.
It's gonna get drives. It's 3-on-3. So what boat do you build? It's called attacking. Speaking of attacking, Vinyl BC, Courtney Williams, Erica Wheeler, Ryan Howard, Ray Burrell, De'Erica Hamby, and Brittany Griner. Do you appreciate the skill, size, and bucket getting of the Vinyl BC?
I see the vision. I believe, I want to say Ryan Howard and De'Erica Hamby were the two holdovers or the protected players before the draft. But I do like the combination, like in general, like, and both players tweeted about it. The Courtney Williams, De'Erica Hamby pick and roll should be tough to deal with in this context. Courtney was with the Lunar Owls in the Feast of Collier last year. But I think the slips from De'Erica Hamby are going to pop in this context. And naturally, if you get dropped, Courtney can just get into pull-ups whenever she wants to. Yeah, this could be a lot of fun. They were a team that blitzed teams in transition towards the back half of last season. So I would imagine they want to keep that up. So I'm excited to see what it looks like.
Very good. It's also exciting. The Lunar Owls coming back. Skylar Diggins, Rachel Banham, Marina Mabry, Rebecca Allen, Nafisa Collier, and Aaliyah Edwards. Now, before I ask you a question, do you prefer that roster or Laces BC, Jordan Canada, Jackie Young, Brittany Sykes, Maddie Segrist, Alyssa Thomas, and Nas Hillman?
Not going to hold you. I might enjoy the Laces BC roster a little bit more than the Lunar Owl roster. Like, Alicia Gray this year. She is on Mist BC. We'll talk about them a little bit. But the Lunar Owls do still just have, like, the best player in the league, at the very least, in this particular league, in the Feast of Collier. And so even if I feel better about the Laces BC roster, we just saw Fee win MVP last season. And in this setting, like, you just cannot send doubles to her comfortably. So I'm certainly not sleeping on what they can do, but I do like this Laces BC roster. I've seen a little bit of consternation about the roster. I think there was like a tweet going around about the average like height of each roster, and they were the only team under an average of 6 feet, which I don't know how much that matters when Jackie Young is as strong as she is, Brittany Sykes is as strong as she is, Maddie Seeker is as strong as she is, Alyssa Thomas and Nas Hillman just kind of speak for themselves in that route. So like a lot of functional strength. So yeah.
So what I will say is, let's see, Mist BC, Arike Angumbawale, Veronica Burton, Stewie, Ali Chagre, Alana Smith, Lee Yeru. Do you respect size and defense, Nikias? Do you respect this team?
Yes, very much so. And I feel like to peel the curtain back, last year I was doing a lot of unrivaled coverage for BR, and I did some preseason power rankings. I think I had Mist BC 1 because of the Stewie of it all. And her combination with Slew, they just had a lot of talent, and they did not have the best season. Alicia Gray, Brianna Stewart, Alana Smith on the floor together, just that could be a lot of fun. Veronica Burton, Alicia Gray, Brianna Stewart on the floor together could be a lot of fun. The bucket getting of Arike Ogunbowale with Alicia Gray and Brianna Stewart could be a lot. They have so many combinations that I am projected to enjoy. I just hope that everyone stays healthy and they are actually as good as what they can be, because that is a roster, like, non-champ division, that is a roster that speaks to me.
Understood. Now I'm going to mention two rosters that may not speak to you, because I believe they're all about bucket getting. Okay. Phantom BC, Kelsey Plum, Dana Evans, Satu Sabli, Natasha Cloud, Aaliyah Boston, and Kiki Iriafin. Mm-hmm. And the newcomer Breeze BC, Paige Beckers, Ari McDonald, Rakia Jackson, Kate Martin, Cam Brink, and Dominique Malanga. Now, which one of these rosters do you believe in more for their ability to get buckets or have balance?
Mm. like, it's hard not to choose Phantom BC in this regard. Like, one, Kelsey Plum actually making her unrivaled debut this year. It was supposed to be in last year, chose not to. But I don't know, but they also have a lot of fun combination they get to. If nothing else, I feel like this is going to be the most annoying team to deal with in the league, independent of like what their actual record is going to be or their championship viability. I don't know if healthy another team is going to be more annoying. It's Kelsey Plum drives and ball pressure. It's Dana Evans drives and ball pressure. It's Satu Sabally drives. It's Natasha Cloud drives and ball pressure. It's Aaliyah Boston post-ups and elbows and all of the things. And then Kiki Iriafin, who just can drive all over the place and draw all of the fouls. You're going to be hurting playing this basketball team, Steve.
Well, speaking of hurting, one, you're going to be hurting when Skylar Diggins figures out what you said about the Lunar Owls for a second consecutive year. Two,
well, not holding
on. Cam Brink and Don Malanga, they don't get respect for the defense?
They sure do. They have a very fun center pairing. And then naturally, like, the Paige Beckers of it all should be fun. And, like, Rekia Jackson had herself a solid unrivaled campaign last year. Like, you saw some of the defense and passing growth got a pop in this context, and at least some of that carried over into the W season last year. What does she look like? More refined? That could be fun. Took more threes towards the second half of the W season. So, like, she brings that to the table in this context. This could be a pretty good, a sneaky good team, rather. Certainly seems to be like the fan favorite team at the very least.
The fan favorite team indeed, and I'm going to get to what I believe will end up being Nikias' favorite team, the Hive BC. Mitchell, Natisha Heidemann, Sonia Citron, Sanaya Rivers, Ezzie Madbigor, and Monique Billings. You are going to like that team so much more than you think right now.
I don't doubt it. It's going to be Drive FC, Lowe's and Keys. I guess between them and Phantom BC. But Kelsey Mitchell in this context is going to be nasty. Also making her unrivaled debut. Like, this is just a team of newcomers. Well, I guess technically not Natisha Heidemann, as she was like an injury replacement. What do you
mean? Natisha Heidemann played for every team in Unrivaled.
Like, five teams. Yeah, I'm saying this is her first full season with Unrivaled. I guess that's the more accurate way to frame it as a roster player. But yeah, Kelsey Mitchell's going to be fun. Sonya Citron, we see what kind of shot creation growth we see, because that was certainly one of the things that surprised me early on in her Mystic season. You were just kind of expecting, all right, spot-ups, cuts, et cetera. It's like, oh, no, here are a whole bunch of handoffs, and I can just get to these pull-ups and I can get to these drives as well. So if she builds off of that, that's going to be fun. Sanaya Rivers knocking down middies, as she did towards the tail end of last season. Her drives and the defense should pop there. Ezzie, I like Ezzie in this format. Let her drive the Durham basketball. Let's just put the ball in her hands, period. It's just an interesting Seattle season for old Ezzie Madbigor. I'm glad she's healthy, and that should be interesting.
Yeah. See what I meant, folks.
The vision.
Do you have any free throws, buddy?
No free throws for me. Actually, I do have one single unrivaled question for you. Oh, here it is.
It's already begun.
No, it's already started. That's great. No, because when you turn the unrivaled section into a free throws, it's like, well, all right, then never mind. Who's your favorite heading into the unrivaled season, Steve? Tips off January 5th, so we got some time to think about it. But what team speaks to you the most?
The Mist.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah, come on, buddy. That's easy.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Do you have free throws?
All right. Higher trade value. Power rank. Trey Young, Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, LaMelo Ball.
Oh, let me get to typing. So we got Trey, we got Zion, we got Ja, and we got who else?
LaMelo.
There's a whole lot of Carolina on this list. I don't like this. if we're power ranking them, I would probably say I'd go LaMelo. LaMelo, Zion, Trey, Ja, I think would be my order. If we're talking trade value.
Okay. Does Jaren Jackson Jr. get traded?
I don't think so. Can I ask you a follow-up free throw based on that?
Absolutely.
If the Grizzlies and or Jaren Jackson were to press that button, what team would you like to see him on?
Any.
Okay. That's cheating. We'll let you rock.
Well, no, as I say, you get John Morant to the Miami Heat. Get those drives there, man.
Yeah, I'm sure he would love that offense. Wait, I'm sorry. I'm gaining word that there were hashtag questions last season about the offense pertaining to Ja Morant. I'm hearing that Noah LaRoche was part of the Memphis staff and then was no longer part of the Memphis staff and is now consulting for Miami, which is the team that you just suggested should trade for Ja Morant.
Oh, you David names. We gotta get out of here. Did you know Luka Doncic has scored 200 points in 194 minutes?
I didn't know the specifics of the totals, but that would track with all of the bucket getting that he's gotten, that he's done this year. Salute to him.
Who was your sneaky candidate for coach of the year?
I want to put on my Steve hat and say Tiago Splitter. I'm not going to do that, though. Sneaky candidate for coach of the year.
Oh, you lost the keys. I have one.
No, that was a good. That would call me off guard. Low key, is it JB?
JB Bickerstaff? Now we're expecting JB Bickerstaff?
No, right, just, I mean, the Pistons
hit the horns.
No, I'm just saying they shake off the interesting start against Chicago. They just quietly have, I think, the best or the second best defense in basketball. And they're towards the top of the East. Like, I don't think Billy Donovan counts as sneaky because the Bulls are just at the top of the East right now as of recording. And so we're talking about someone that's doing a good job or could be perceived to be doing a good job that no one's really talking about right now. Like, the Pistons, I think, are 5-2 in the defense.
Very good. Last one for me. Okay. Power rank these three players' season so far. Okay. Alperen Şengün, Cade Cunningham, and Evan Mobley.
You just wanted to be mean to me. That's what that was. That's what this is. It's probably in order, lowest of keys. I'd probably go Şengün, Cade, and Mobley.
All right. We can get out of here.
And thank goodness Darius Garland is back. And thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We're on the channel every Tuesday and Friday, so rock with us. If that's more of your speed, you can catch me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can catch Steve on socials at SteveJones20. Also, read our work at Yahoo Sports. Steve, again, did a tremendous job with the rookie rankings. He's going to have more NBA words coming from you. Anytime we can get podcast words from Steve and tweets and threads from Steve and also written word from Steve, it's just a whole lot of Steve. Tap into all the basketball knowledge that he is spinning across multiple contexts. But we appreciate y'all rocking with us. We will catch y'all next week.